Welcome to the Mavs Fans for Life podcast. I am your host, Landon Thomas. Thanks for tuning in. Today's guests will include Ian Kayanja. Welcome back, Ian, and Shanavaz Makhani. So today's episode, we will be talking about Mavs signing forward slash big man Chris Silva to a 10-day contract and how that impacts the team. Or does that at all? I mean, 10 days, but it's an audition. The 6-9 record in January, we will end it with the Shams report, Dorian Finney-Smith, and trade rumors from the Mavericks. So let's start with Chris Silva. Ian, I'll start with you. First of all, what's your thoughts on 10-day contracts as a whole? And then what does this signing of Chris Silva do for them?
Oh, my thoughts on 10-day contracts. I think they're pretty interesting if they actually play meaningful minutes. I never understand when teams sign 10-day contracts and then not they play the guy like 30 seconds or a minute in like two games and then they're done with them. And so if they play meaningful minutes and it's actually an audition, then I'm all for it. That's why, you know, and I don't want to I want to make sure I phrase this correctly. The COVID year last year was really interesting because when, you know, all the league got COVID pretty much, and we're seeing all these former Hoopers that were stars for us, you know, in the mid 2000s getting run again. I was like, this is kind of fun. And you got to see some guys that were out of the league for a while come back on these like 10-day contracts and actually play. And so when a team actually uses their 10-day contract guys on players they feel have potential, it always does intrigue me, even though very rarely do they convert into much of anything. And I think that the Mavs bringing in Silva, it's just that more than anything, they probably want to see him in practice versus actually utilizing him as a guy in the rotation. In my mind, it was probably one of those things that was like, it can't hurt. You will see what's there if there's anything there. He did have a stint with like Miami or something back in the day, and I mean he was like a 3 or 4 year college guy. And so I don't think it's anything crazy or anything necessarily really really important. But it's always fun to see new names. It kind of gets stale covering the same team. And as Landon, you and I both know, it's kind of been the same team for the last 3 years. So, you know, getting any new names in here is quite exciting. And so, I don't know. I don't think it'll be too much of anything. It'll just probably be another guy. And then on the ninth day, they'll let him know that he's not going to be back for anything else.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully this weather gets better. So we can actually go ask him questions and see how he responds. And just like you said, another fresh body around. Shanavaz, first of all, how does it feel to have Ian back? I mean, you know, it's like old times, Shanavaz versus Ian. What's your thoughts on that? And then what's your thoughts on Chris Silva joining the Mavs on a 10-day contract?
I love having Ian back, man. Ian's my boy. It's always good. Yeah. It's always good times talking to him. You know, we've got our group thread going, so we don't hear from him. We never get to, unfortunately, not be graced by his presence. But this is it's good seeing his face and hearing his voice. It's very relieving for me.
Yes, Sean Navaz showing love. It's a rarity. Let me take it, man.
Now say how you really
feel. That's it. no, look, the Chris Silva thing, it tells me two things. So, well, I'll get into the two things. Like G League stats, you take them for what you will, but he averaged, 14-9 or 14-10 in the G League and, you know, in about 28 minutes. So decent production, right? I mean, you know, if he can come off the bench, you know, this is a team that's hurting for bodies at this point with all the injuries that the Mavericks have suffered. You know, you're seeing, you know, they've got two big men really in Dwight Powell and Davis Bertans and we've seen how bad that's been over the last, you know, few weeks, especially with Christian Wood and Maxey out. So You know, I think this is, you know, this tells me one of two things in my mind. It's the Mavs are, you know, preparing for Christian Wood and Maxey potentially to be out maybe longer than expected. You know, whether that's true or not, we'll find out here, you know, as, you know, Christian Wood's going to get reevaluated. But I think it's, it, you know, a lot of this is for that protection that in case, you know, there's some more time missed, at least you have another body off the bench, another guy that can, you know, help protect down low, where this team is sorely lacking. And then the other thing it tells me is it's another roster space in case Dallas makes a move, you know, with the trade deadline next week. I mean, this is if the Mavericks start packaging players, you know, it's really, you know, it should be easy for them to convert that, that, 10 day contract into a standard, you know, contract for the rest of the year. If they need somebody, you know, as opposed to just going, you know, dumpster diving for random players after the trade deadline. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens, but, you know, Chris Silva's got experience playing with Miami. Like Ian said, he played on that 2020 finals team that lost to the Lakers in the bubble. So, you know, he's got some experience playing with, you know, with really good players in guys like Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in with this team and you know, kind of how the Mavericks integrate him into the lineup.
Question for y'all. Does it feel like the waiver wire just isn't as exciting as it used to be? Like, do you remember like when we'd be looking forward to buyout season and there'd be a crop of like half decent players that will get bought out of their contracts and go sign a vet minimum somewhere? Like for this year, there doesn't seem to be much news surrounding any disgruntled, really good role players or something like that who want to reach a buyout. And have you guys thought about that at all?
Well, don't you think it's more so it's not the gap between contenders and the rest of the league is not what it used to be? I mean, remember, because like
exactly
a few years
what
ago,
I was thinking.
Yeah, there was only like, what, three or four powerhouses and all the players wanted to join those teams. And now it seems like there's a little bit of fluidity there between contenders. I mean, you could say Denver, Memphis, I mean, in the West side, and then what, Bucks, Celtics,
Nets,
maybe
Sixers.
Nets, Sixers.
Yeah.
But we don't even know if that's taken seriously. I mean, especially on the West side, I mean, I don't think anybody is chopping at the bit to join the Nuggets or join the Grizzlies. But that is interesting that you did point that out with the buyout. I haven't even thought about that because it was pretty crazy the last couple of years. And then also, you know, it's just changed. There's a lot of two-way players now, and there's not as much older guys in the league that are ring chasing. It seems like the league is transcending into a new generation of just younger players. But Shanovas, what do you think about?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I'm thinking back to, you know, when LeBron was in Cleveland and it was just Cavs, Warriors every single year. And every time you heard a buyout,
that's another thing. Yeah.
It's like, are they going to Cleveland or are they going to Golden State? Right. It was one of the two, cause you knew those two teams are coming out of the East and West. So yeah, I think Landon, you hit it right on the head. I mean, there's not, you know, and you bring up the interesting point that a lot of those older players that were ring chasing are gone, right? They've pretty much retired at this point. You know, now the only old guy that's ring chasing is like Serge Ibaka, and you know, he's just not playing for the Bucks and they're trying to figure out what to do with him, right? So
hey, don't forget Blake Griffin.
And he already ring chased and went to Boston, right? Like that's, you know, he's playing like 2 minutes a game. So he doesn't care, right? He's just sitting on the bench and watching Tatum do his thing. So I don't, you know, I think the way that the landscape of the NBA has changed where you've got a lot more parity now and you've got, you know, really five, six, seven, you know, different teams that potentially could vie for a title. It's going to make things really, really exciting, but it's also not just, oh, this vet's getting bought out. They're going to Cleveland. They're teaming up with LeBron, right? Or they're going to Golden State. So it makes things a little bit more interesting. I think teams are more open to holding on to some of those guys. And I think from a player perspective, they're like, you know what? I don't have to go, you know, just play with, you know, X player. I can stay on this team and see, you know, see what happens.
Yeah. And I think also the play-in really affected that. Teams that used to be in like 10th or 11th would be like, all right, we're selling, you know, like we're just sellers. Like everybody's gone. But there is a real value and there's money earned in those play-in games where, you know, like for as piss poor as the Lakers have been this season, like they're very much still in the playoff hunt through the play-in tournament. And so in years past, maybe that would have meant if this was a different era, that would have meant, say, like they buy out a Lonnie Walker or something like that, right? I'm just throwing a name out there. But since they're still a play-in threat, you keep those types of guys. And that's probably also what's taking place. Like Chicago would in like years past would have been a team that's like on the verge of selling, right? Like they kind of had a disappointing year. And I want to bring this back to the Mavs because the Mavs in their limited cupboard of assets would have been a team that could have been scouring that former buyout market to improve around the margins. And that's just not an option for roster improvement, it seems, anymore. And that leads into my next point that I also wanted to ask both of you guys. With the Nuggets shopping Bones Highland, would you want to see the Mavs make a move for a guy like Bones? Or would you want more of a proven role player, good starter?
To be honest with you, I mean, and that would be a great topic lead into next week where we talk about all these trades or trade rumors. But to answer your question, I don't even think it matters for a guy like Bones Highland. And, you know, I've talked about him a few times on this podcast. I really like his game.
You love but Bones.
Jason Kidd loves veterans. And let's just be honest. Mm. I mean, he does like Josh Green. Obviously, Luka's a superstar. But outside of those two guys, I mean, look at Hardy. It's taken him, what, 6/10 of the season to just get 5 minutes a game. So I think Bones is a great player, but I think he would have to go to a team that he's getting minutes right away. Cause I don't think the Mavs would trade for him and then just give him instantly third ball handler minutes. I think they would do it for a veteran, like you saw with Dinwiddie last year, but I don't think Bones coming in here would just get 25 minutes off the bat. I think he would probably be in the Hardy position where he would get 15 minutes one game and then get 3 minutes the next game because he's dependent upon his veterans, especially in the second half. Sean of us, what's your thoughts on that question?
I mean, I think you have kind of your version of Bones Highland in Jaden Hardy, and you don't utilize him, right? So what, giving up assets to get a guy that you're just going to treat in the same way, like it doesn't make sense, right? Would I love Bones Highland? Sure. Like he's a fun player. I mean, he's got a lot of potential. I mean, we've seen him have some really, really good games, especially in the postseason last year. But I don't think the Mavs have the assets to get it done because Denver, you know, I feel like Denver's looking for something specific. And you know, with them getting Bruce Brown and you see Aaron Gordon, you know, ball handling, obviously Jokic is, you know, you've got two really true primary point guards on that team in Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, right? So you don't really need a guy like Bones Highland if you've got one of those two guys on the floor at all times. So for them, I feel like they're looking for something very specific and knowing the upside of Bones Highland, they can capitalize on that to get them to where they want to be. I don't think the Mavericks have enough to get it. And I agree with Landon that if they're not going to play Jaden Hardy, what's to say that they're going to make a move to get a guy like Bones Highland? Then you play him over Jaden Hardy. It just doesn't make sense.
Good point.
Well, what's your thoughts, Ian?
Well, I think they're in line with you guys. But the thing is I don't know. I really like Bones, man. I like Bones. And when I saw that report that the Nuggets are looking to get rid of him, my first thought was like, why? And then my second thought was, how would he fit if Dallas made a move for him?
I think there's a difference. I think looking to get rid of him is one thing, but looking to get rid of him for the right deal
like Sean Navas said. And the Nuggets have that luxury being a really good team.
Yeah. When you're a team like the Nuggets and you're in first place and you've got this like wealth of good players on your roster, you know, it's not necessarily getting – I get where you're coming from, Ian. I don't – but I think for more so for them, it's a luxury, right? It's like, hey, we have a chance to improve our team. We're first in the Western Conference. This is probably the best shot that we've had in a long time, right? This might be the only shot that we've got to really put ourselves and separate ourselves with a two-time MVP in Jokic. Who knows what happens next year? We've got Jamal Murray healthy. You know, let's go for it. And if Bones Highland is the one guy that they can move to make themselves better, I think they have to. I think Aaron Gordon probably would have been that guy last year, but I think he's made himself kind of indispensable the way he's played this year for that team. I mean, he's arguably should be an all-star. So, I mean, you know, I think they've kind of assessed their situation and said, you know, getting KCP, getting Bruce Brown, like that's kind of solidified some of their weaknesses. And now it's like, all right, we need maybe one other small piece here. So let's move a guy in Bones Highland that is kind of just a luxury at this point for what we do as a team. And let's see if it can put us over the top.
And that's what you said, luxury. That's their asset. And that's why that's why they're dangling him in front of teams to see if, like you said, because they're in win now mode. And that's one of the players you would want from that team specifically. And Highland's kind of in the same position as Pritchard in Boston. You know, he's on a contender and they're just playing win now players. And they're both good, Highland and Pritchard. I would actually love to cover both of them in Dallas as a third ball handler. But like you said, those teams are going to want something for two young point guards who could be part of their future. Okay, so let's get into the next topic on how the Mavs have done in January. It wasn't a happy new year for this team. Yeah, well, maybe for Reggie Bullock it was happy new year, but but for the Mavericks as a whole.
I called it. I said he would improve.
You did. So, Sean Navas, since you did call it for Reggie Bullock, let's start with you on your thoughts for the month of January, how this team has played. They were 6-9 for the month.
It's rough, man. I don't even know if there's a word to describe it other than, you know, it's defeating. It's sad. It really kind of shows what this team is lacking and what this team really needs to do. You know, there needs sweeping change, right? I think it's got to be, you've got to really look at every piece of the roster and say, everybody should be on top. Everybody should be, you know, tradable other than Luka, right? At this point, I think you've seen what this roster can do, especially the games without Luka. I mean, this team plays JV basketball without him on the floor. Like it's embarrassing to watch. These are professional players and, you know, give them credit. Cause they're all, you know, obviously they're in the league. They're all good. I don't know if it's scheme. I don't know if it's just a reliance on Luka this year that we haven't seen in years past, or if it's missing, you know, the injuries that have really hurt this team, or the lack of secondary ball handling, tertiary ball handling, whatever it is. Something is going on, and it's hard to put your finger on it because the Mavericks are in most of these games, which is the most frustrating part. And a lot of their losses come from blown leads, comes from bad shooting down the stretch. You know, even games where they're shooting the ball well and scoring. I mean, they're giving up 136 and 140 to Portland in back to back games, like, you know, 127 to the Wizards, like without Porzingis. You know, they let Kyle Kuzma like play all over them. It's super frustrating when you watch a team that defense was their calling card last year, and now they can't defend. They can't defend to save their life. And you look at even some of their wins that they had this year. I mean, the Detroit game, we talked about it earlier. You know, kind of offline, Luka had to put up 53 just for the Mavericks to win that game. You look at the Phoenix game. You know, Phoenix themselves are just imploding. The Miami win was probably their best win of the season. The best win of the month, right? I mean, you a team that was on the rise in the Eastern Conference, a team that's very, very gritty, plays good defense, coached really, really well, and they, you know, they took it to Miami, and that kind of felt like, oh, perhaps things will turn around. but it's just, you know, ever since then, the Mavs have, you know, have dropped three of the five that they've played since the Miami game. So it's, for me, it's frustrating as a lifelong Mavs fan. It's frustrating to know that, you know, it kind of feels like a wasted year. And I know before the year, you know, especially with the Porzingis deal, you know, Nico Harrison said this might be kind of a transition year, and it's a way to kind of reset and you get this flexibility. But, you know, the trade deadline's approaching, you know, we're going to get into a period where, you know, the Mavs have gone from third seed to fourth seed to eighth seed back up to sixth seed. And it's kind of, you know, they're lucky that the rest of the Western Conference is kind of in shambles now as well. Right. I mean, we've seen New Orleans on a bad losing streak. We've seen Memphis lose a lot of games. So the Mavericks are still in the thick of things from a playoff perspective because of the fact that the West is so wide open right now. But to think that this team could make any noise in the postseason outside of what Luka can do in a seven game series, it's kind of hard right now.
Mm. Ian, what's your thoughts on the Mavs month of January and how they played?
It's a bleh basketball team. They're just a really bleh basketball team. And the thing I've been writing about this all season, as you guys know, it's like, you know, the Mavs will parade around everything that Luka Doncic is doing, but to me, it's really just sad. It's like the guy that is celebrating his Employee of the Month award, and he's working like 90 hours a week. You know, he's leading the team in sales and everything, but he's working like 90 hours a week. Meanwhile, like, his wife and kid are at home begging to see him, and he's just like obsessed with his work. And then he's just celebrating that Employee of the Month every month. Like, it's a bit like watching that.
Analogies, man. I missed the best words.
The best words, Ian.
And so it's like, okay, like, yeah, you're having all this individual success with Luka, but that individual success is coming at the expense of everything else. And it's an expense that you incurred when you didn't have to. And I've been on this since the summer. And yes, I know it's old news, and yes, I know, like, people don't want to hear it, but it's still, to me, on Nico, on the front office, on Mark Cuban, for letting Brunson walk for nothing. And yeah, hindsight is always 20/20, and people can say he wasn't going to, you know, re-sign and whatever. The fact of the matter was, there was a number that Brunson wanted them to hit when the extension was open during the season, and they didn't hit it. And so
4 for 55 would have been a steal for him. Looking, you know, like, it would have been an absolute heist.
And so, like, yes, no one wants to hear that, but, like, the reason this year is a quote unquote transition year is because of that mistake. In my mind, you can't make the Western Conference Finals. Yes, they had a bit of a favorable run, but you can't make the Western Conference Finals and then just not bring back your second player. Like, that's like mind-boggling basketball front office ineptitude. and not only not bring them back, but then get nothing. You know, like, they're gone, and then you sell everybody on. And Dinwiddie's a good pro, but he's not Brunson, you know, and like, that's the nature of this year. And then specifically January is where we're seeing the culmination of all of those sins, where you have short-sighted moves. You fall in love with players that are good, but not great, in Tim Hardaway and the Maxis of the world. You ink them to long extensions. And how many times have we seen this with the Mavs? Well, where they're willing to extend the guys that are good but not great, and they're willing to let go the guys that have the potential to be great. And it's like they fall in love with these quote-unquote culture guys that really have only value in – really more value in Dallas than anywhere else. And So you get what you pay for, right? When you extend Maxey and then he gets hurt, and then you trot out Dwight Powell for the 100th year in a row, and you know you ink JaVale McGee, who was done 2 years ago, and then you lose 9 games in January. The finger only should be pointed to you. Like there's nowhere else to turn. When you have Jason Kidd uninventive in his offense, in that, like, even when Luka went out, the offense stayed the same. It's just insert Spencer Dinwiddie into doing the same thing. High pick and roll into four other guys standing around and one person playing one-on-one basketball. And that is not sustainable. It never will be. The only time where you can run that high pick and roll one-on-one game all the time is when you have two or three transcendent stars to play that type of basketball with you. And so January, to me, it's just this culmination of what's been brewing. The disappointment that the fans feel on Twitter, it's warranted. The criticism is warranted. You know, Jason Kidd was lauded as this defensive coach. Lo and behold, he's this great defensive coach because he can't seem to inspire his guys to play defense anymore. And then last night he says, you know, we're turning things around. And I'm like, no, you played a Pistons team that really just had Bogey, and then Jaden Ivey fouled out. And still, like, Bogdanovich was looking like Larry Bird for stretches.
Looks so good.
And so it's like all of these issues culminating created this month of January that I feel surmises my new position on the Mavs, that they should actually take a step back and be sellers to gain assets heading into next year, more so than try to be buyers at this deadline. Because, okay, you buy in to exactly what? Because to me, like Sean Navas said, anyone not named Luka is expendable, and they've proven that because they can't win games without him.
Yeah, I gotta take a break after that one, man. I feel like Ian was, I mean, both of y'all hit the nail on the head, but like, Ian went to church. I mean, you missed the past couple of weeks, and you just been writing a novel, been waiting for this moment. I mean, you ain't lying, but I mean,
it's just been frustrating because I hate seeing wasted generational talent. And like you saw how quickly, once the Warriors found out Steph Curry was generational, you saw how quickly they erected a roster that turned into a dynasty.
Yeah, but that's different. They drafted those players. But that's the difference.
But this is also what I'm saying, is that they were also able to build that because even though Steph Curry had ankle injuries, they still inked him to an extension, and they didn't let him walk for nothing. And like, that's what smart front offices do, is that, yeah, was that extension somewhat risky initially? Yes, but then want to know what it turned out to be? It turned out to be the best deal ever, because that deal set them up to get Kevin Durant down the road. Now imagine, like, if the Mavs actually believed in Brunson and you get him at that $55 million marker with the cap set to jump again in, like, the next 2 years.
He might be one of the most tradable assets in basketball.
And so it's like, that's what I think about. And that's what's so frustrating. I think about what could have been if they just followed simple, smart team logic.
Okay, well, let me jump in here. He's gone. He's not coming back. We've been talking about this all season. I mean, he's not coming through the door. If he's coming through the door, it's with the Knicks team. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, It was a horrible mistake. They didn't extend him when he was available, kind of like what they're doing with Christian Wood. And it bit him in the ass. That's what it boils down to. They took a risk, and they played him even more because they needed it with injuries right after that. And then they didn't know Brunson was going to go on a tear to be one of the best point guards for the rest of the season and the playoffs. And so it kind of bit them, but they're in the position that they're in now. And I'm not defending them. I'm just saying facts. I mean, they made a mistake, and then Brunson proved them wrong. And hindsight is 20/20, but at the same time, shout out to Brunson for balling out in his opportunity. Then go take the money and go somewhere where you're appreciated.
He earned it.
He earned it. So yeah. Good. And that's the thing. They didn't have a chance. I think it's twofold. They didn't have a chance in the offseason to retain him. That's different. Mm-hmm. But like you pointed out, they did have a chance to retain him during the season with the extension. But at the same time, it's the same position. They play the same position. You have a top three player, not just point guard. We're talking top three player in the league. And it's just one of those mistakes. I don't think it was as bad as like Steve Nash, stuff like that. But it is a mistake.
Can we talk about the history of the Mavs letting go great point guards? Like,
That's a whole nother episode. we got plenty of time for that, because there's going to be some dry weeks. We got plenty of time for
that. We'll do those in the dog days of late March.
Exactly. But, okay, so going back to the 6-9 record, I think it boils down to two things. I think it boils down to coaching, and then I also think it boils down to injuries. And that's just because I could say the Luka-centric offense, but that goes to coaching. So that's why I say coaching is number one, because like you said, Jason Kidd on offense, they lost their creativity. And then you don't really see it from the assistant coaches as well. It seems like it's Jason Kidd watching Luka pretty much control the whole game. And that's not a bad thing. It sucks when you have some of these 4-3 moments when he does get doubled and they're not capitalizing on it because there's no other offense that they have. And that's what sucks, because they're either not hitting shots, or it's just other teams. How many times have we heard other teams say, "Oh yeah, we know what Luka's doing," or, "Oh, we know what the Mavericks are about to run"? I mean, we knew what the Mavs were doing. We just had to stop them a couple times in their losses. And that's what's troubling. It's predictable. The second point is injuries as well. I mean, Dorian was out. Josh Green was out. Luka missed a couple games, but Christian Wood's been out a week and a half. And obviously Maxey, just a continuation from his injury. I think that does play a big role in it, because like Sean Avaz or Ian, one of y'all said, I mean, to be honest, everyone's playing a step up. Like, you have Dinwiddie, you have Wood, who are solid, third, fourth options on great teams. And then you have the rest of the roster that's just playing up. Like, you have THJ, you have Dorian, you have Reggie. They shouldn't be playing as big of these minutes that they are. Bertans and Powell. I mean, they're not. You got Pinson. There was a time in January where Pinson was playing every game. I mean, and then McKinley Wright was playing like six games in a row. And that's, you're not going to be honest, you're not going to win those games. So I do think injuries play a big portion of it. I mean, your last guy on the roster, and then you have a two-way player playing majority of your backup minutes. So that I think that plays a portion of it.
I was, you brought up an interesting point. It just kind of reminded me of, you mentioned that from a coaching perspective, it's not just Kidd, but it's like, it's the assistant coaches as well that are kind of don't really know what to do. I think the Mavs are really feeling the loss of Igor Kokoskov, right? This is a guy that coached Luka, right? That, you know, the Mavericks were one of, if not the most efficient offense with him as an assistant coach, a guy who's won a title as a coach. And now he's in Brooklyn, and you see Brooklyn's offense kind of still humming along without Kevin Durant. I think the Mavs are really feeling the loss of some of these assistant coaches that they've lost the last few years. And
a
it's
a bit of a brain drain. You know,
yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not just one guy that, you know, Jason Kidd isn't Greg Popovich, right? And he's not Mike Budenholzer. And even great coaches in the NBA do have great assistant coaches that can help them with game plan, can help them with schemes when they're doing something maybe that isn't working or isn't resonating with the players. I mean, sometimes, you know, maybe it goes through one ear and out the other, but, you know, players build relationships with the assistant coaches. And, you know, Luka had that with Kokoskov. And I thought when the Mavericks hired him, it was a great hire, and they let him go after a year, and he goes to Brooklyn. And it just reminded me of, you know, the fact that having people on your staff as well that can kind of be that voice in your head when you're kind of in your own way. I mean, maybe it's what Jason Kidd's lacking.
You know, and Jason Kidd's favorite word, second favorite word, because we all know his favorite word is participate. But his second favorite word. Accountability. And that's the problem, because we always talk about players with, he brings up accountability, but I think there needs to be some accountability from the coaching staff.
And I agree.
Especially 100%. Defense. Because Sean Sweeney last year, he was looking like a head coach candidate with the way he was having these guys play defense. And how many times have we seen just no effort on the defensive side? And we thought that was the creativity with his assistant coach on the defensive side, but there's none there. And then the offense, St. Jean and Jared Dudley and all these guys, there's no creativity. It's just we'll see how Luka plays this game, and hopefully the other guys make shots, and that's not going to get you far.
I think it's a bit of and this is just from my perspective, it might be an issue with the culture Jason Kidd set. As a player's coach, you always toe the line of being too close to the players, that they start looking at you as an equal versus a coach. And in a way, like, yes, everyone talks about the closeness of the Mavericks as being one of the assets, but I think it's also a vice for the Mavericks, because it's hard to inspire effort, right? If you can't bank on your closeness to bring that out. And that's why, you know, I do a lot of research on media theories. One of the most effective ways to get people to change their mind is using a fear appeal. And it's interesting when you start thinking about it in the context of sports. Why are football coaches so effective at getting, you know, 70 guys to buy in? Because they instill fear. And the NBA's culture kind of doesn't really allow for coaches to do that anymore. So you either have the great tacticians or you have the players' coaches. And one of the trade-off with the players' coaches is that eventually the effectiveness of that relationship is also a hindrance to the coaching mission. And sometimes I wonder if that's what's going on, where since the roster is so stagnant, right, since there's a whole bunch of security for a lot of these guys, there is not really that incentive or fear that's driving them to be better anymore. Especially because Kidd sticks with his guys. So say Reggie starts stinking up the joint again, that lack of drive to say, like, man, am I going to get benched? Or no, it'll take, knowing Kidd, it'll take Reggie stinking for 2.5 months before he thinks about benching it. And so I think in a way that hinders getting the most out of players at times, especially during the day-to-days of the regular season. Now, the upside of that is that, like, in a playoff series, your guys are going to run through a wall for you, right? But you have to get there first. And all the great coaches kind of balance out. So if you have a great tactician, you need players, coaches as assistants to bring that warmness and that familiarity. And I somewhat wonder whether Jason Kidd's assistants don't necessarily balance out his player friendliness And then to your point about accountability, sometimes, especially like that loss to the Wizards where Jason Kidd drew up that boo-boo final play, and then you run it two times in a row.
Yeah.
That's one of those games where you say, hey, that's on me. I should have come up with a better play. And I would love to hear Jason Kidd say that a few times, because his late game play calling has been horrendous this year. When if you look at the shots that his plays are getting Luka, they're like half court step backs half the time.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I understand players have to go out there and execute, but sometimes you'd like to see the coaching staff be like, hey, that one was on me. I should have put you guys in a better position.
Yeah, that just brings me back to the point where when opposing players say they know what you're going to do, that's a problem. And it's true. I mean, we know if the Mavericks are down two or down one or down three with the last play, we know what's going to happen. I mean, it's the same play. And we've seen it multiple times this year. And Luka goes off the pin screen and he goes to the top of the key or the left top of the key. And we know what is going to happen. It's going to be a step back three. I mean, they tried it differently to do Spencer, like you just mentioned, but they were down one. And they were going for to make it different. Quote unquote, air quotes, to make it different. Instead of the step back shot, pass it to Spencer for a three. That didn't even make sense. I mean, it still was the same foundation of the play too. So there has to be some creativity on the plays. And I think that's another thing. I mean, we do have to bring it back up. I have to bring it back up, even though I shot it down. Jalen Brunson, he made the offense difference. Because, yes, like you said, Spencer is a great player, but he's not the same player Brunson was, and he's not the same type of player Brunson was. You know, like you said, he's kind of like Luka. Is just, you know, obviously the diet version of Luka. They run the same schemes, but when Jalen Brunson was in there, he was posting up. He was the mid-range king, and he was, you know, always going to the lane. Points in the paint.
Had a little boogie in his game.
Yeah, yeah. And Spencer, he does the same. He's shoot threes or he drives past the big guys. I mean, it's pretty much Luka's game without the post game and mid range, but it's a lot of step back threes and take bigger guys to the hole. So I think that's an issue. They got to spice it up differently, and that's what I thought they were moving towards that. Because remember a few games ago, Josh Green was starting to initiate the offense and run plays while Luka was coming off screens. And that I was actually taken by surprise, because I even asked Josh Green that, because I was like, whoa, this is different. And I kind of like it. Not all game, but it just makes it different.
You need variation. You can't just do the same thing the entire game. Like NBA defenses are going to pick up on it.
And then they go once. Because Luka went out for a couple games, and then he comes back for the Pistons game and went back to the old offense. It was the same thing, back to the old offense.
Old habits die hard.
Yeah, so. Whew. All right, well, let's get to the main course. The main reason listeners are listening to this right now, it's Dorian Finney-Smith trade rumors. And this is very interesting. I'll start with you, Ian, but this is real interesting, because back, 6 months ago, Dorian was untouchable. I mean, you would think Luka and Dorian. I mean, that he was playing that good in the mat, and everyone loved him that much. Even Reggie Bullock, like those two guys were in the playoffs, coming off that playoffs. You're like, okay, these two guys are going to be in the starting lineup for the next 4 or 5 years, and we're going to run them with the defensive schemes and the shot making. But fast forward to today, it's a whole nother ball game. You hear Reggie Bullock and rumors, and now you're hearing Dorian Finney-Smith and trade rumors by Shams. He reported that the Mavs are open to listening to trade rumors, and Dorian Finney-Smith will be available for a star player in return. Obviously, that's not happening. But what's your thoughts on Dorian being available with the Mavericks?
Obviously, it has to be for the right price, because Dorian is like one of those culture guys in Dallas, yeah, like where their value can't really be surmised in the box score. It's this intangible interpersonal relationship type of value. Mm-hmm. And Luka loves playing with him. But I do think that there's a ceiling to what this team can be in the future if Dorian is one of your starting forwards and you don't have a second superstar. And so it's kind of addition by subtraction, where like, yeah, you'll lose the intangible stuff if you have to trade him. But if you're bringing in a star or a good starter, then it's no questions asked, in my book. Because, in my estimation, Dorian's more valuable in the locker room than necessarily his on-court production. Because I think he kind of falls into that weird category that Maxie's in for me, where Dorian is more valuable to Dallas than to a lot of other teams.
Mm.
And
let me ask you this. Are you saying that because he's having, let's just be honest, a disappointing season comparative to the past two, three years?
Or playoffs as well. I thought Dorian's success was success built on a niche role he was playing in Dallas.
Gotcha.
And that role was kind of being this offensive release valve, right, for Brunson and Doncic. And part of the reason why Dorian's offense is taking a hit is that when Brunson left, there isn't that other starting guard that puts pressure on the rim. And Brunson put a unique pressure on the rim because he's not, you know, playing above the rim, but he was constantly probing and attacking and forcing defenses to help off of the strong side of the ball, which was oftentimes a corner Dorian was in. And he got a whole lot more open corner threes than he's been getting this year. And so I think that's part of the reason why Dorian's had a down year. But he's also just always been more valuable in Dallas than he would have been anywhere else. I think Dallas was one of the few teams that had the patience to wait for him to develop. And so now he has a very tradable contract. And so it really didn't surprise me. Because once you see the number that he signed his extension for, you're like, okay, so this was kind of in the works of, you know, you're a very movable piece to this operation. Because, again, 3-and-D wings are available in the NBA. So in my mind, it's always get your two superstar building blocks and you can always fill out the 3-and-D wings later. Don't build your team around the niche role players and be unwilling to swing for the fences.
Shanavaz, what's your thoughts on Dorian Finney-Smith being available?
Yeah, I said it earlier. I think everybody on this team should be tradable other than Luka Doncic. I think Dorian in the past has been a key cog in what the Mavericks have done, especially as kind of their main 3-and-D guy. He's been arguably their best defender over the last few years. Hit some really clutch shots, and Ian brought up a good point of Brunson's penetration and how it opened the door for Dorian last season, and really over the last few seasons. But this is a guy that, let's not forget, was an undrafted rookie. Wasn't a starter coming into his career with the Mavericks. He's having his worst numbers since 2018, when he wasn't even a full-time starter at that point. So he's having a down year by every metric. And I think even defensively, we've seen a little bit of a slip off. You know, he used to be somebody who was very, very reliable on the defensive end, who would you know, always pick up the opposing player's best player, or excuse me, the team's best player. And we've seen him still do that, but, you know, he's struggled a little bit in matchups against better players. And I think when you're at a crossroads like the Mavericks are, you can't be picky and you can't be choosy. You can be opportunistic in the sense of, you know, if the right deal comes along, like Ian said, and I think what we all agree on, right, don't move him just to move him. It's the same thing we talk about with Christian Wood, right? It's if you're going to make a trade, make the right trade. You know, whether we know it's the right trade right away, you know, who knows, but this isn't a guy that you're just moving just to move. But he's got a very movable contract. He's definitely a commodity. You know, I think he could fit in with almost any contender in the NBA, whether that's, you know, as a fringe starter or even as a really, really good depth piece for some of these deeper teams across the NBA that really need a veteran 3-and-D guy. But when you've got a 23-year-old Luka Doncic and you've got to kind of figure out how to build the roster, we're kind of back in that mode where, okay, well, how do you build the roster around Luka Doncic? You kind of had it last year and now you don't. So where do you go from here? You know, and Dorian at this point might be the Mavericks' most movable asset and best asset that they could probably move to get value back and try to put a team around Luka that helps you to advance in the playoffs.
Yeah, both of y'all are right. I think they're at a point where, especially with the new contract of Luka kicking in, like, okay, now let's do what we got to do to make some moves. Comparative to the, okay, which guys does Luka like being around him in the locker room? And that's where the Mavericks are right now. You have to make moves to win now, especially when, like both of y'all mentioned, the league where it's at right now and the parity. Of course, you have like 6-7 teams that are at the top, but a few years ago, or even last year, there was only like 3 teams that you would talk about, and it's growing and growing. And then the middle ground, there's a lot of teams in the middle, and that's something that the Mavericks need to focus on heading into the trade deadline and heading into the offseason, especially Nico Harrison. It's game time.
I think they need to take advantage of this, because very rarely do you have a year where you've got a lot of these teams that are in playoff positioning and kind of all jumbled together, right? Outside of Denver and Memphis in the Western Conference, I mean, everyone's within like three and a half games of each other. So this is a really good year to really take advantage of teams that are desperate to add, you know, to make an addition like this. And the Mavericks need to be really smart about it, but be advantageous as well.
Well, that's what brings me to my next point, is it's what are they getting back? Because in the eyes of the Mavericks, they're thinking, oh, we're buyers. We're using Dorian.
We ain't getting you a star.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Well, first of all, that's what I'm saying. Like, the Mavericks are, it's twofold here, because the Mavericks are thinking they're buyers by making Dorian available, when other teams might be saying, hey, y'all are actually sellers. Like, we just want to take Dorian from y'all. Mm-hmm. Like, see, there's a difference. So it all depends on what Nico can do. And we all viewed the Porzingis trade as a transition. And, you know, he said it many times. He's probably said flexible, like, probably 20 times after that trade. But they're actually lucky that Spencer did work out here. But it's game time. Like, this, Nico has had enough time in his position to now be criticized. And I think this is the trade deadline and the offseason to see what Nico is really about. If he doesn't do anything, he deserves to be criticized, because that's what they brought him in here to do with all his player relationships. That's the only reason he was a big time player for that position, because he didn't have the experience of being a GM. He didn't have the experience of being an assistant GM. So he had the player relationships from stars all the way down to overseas players. So we need to see his relationships with other GMs. We need to see his negotiation skills. We need to see how his talent assessment skills. We need to see that right now, and we need to see that throughout the offseason. So this is the time for Nico to do something. And like y'all said, he shouldn't be just trading Dorian for flexibility or just to move him to get a rental that he thinks is going to be help a playoff push. He needs to assess this team. How do I make this team good now? And how do I make this team good in the next 4 to 5 years under Luka's new contract?
The thing that really scares me, though, sorry, Ian. The thing that really terrifies me, and I'll pose this to both of you guys and you know, just get your thoughts on it. I feel like the trade landscape over the last few years has completely shifted, right? And the fact that the Mavericks don't have access to their draft pick, I think is really going to put a hindrance on the type of moves that we can make, because you're seeing guys like Rudy Gobert go for numerous first-round picks, right? We saw Donovan Mitchell get moved for numerous first-round picks. I think it's less about the player going back as opposed to the draft capital that some of these teams are getting, you know, are receiving on kind of the other end of the deal, where it feels like in the past it was really player for player swaps, right? Or it was, you know, a bundle of players and maybe a first round pick and a protected pick here and there. And now you're getting pick swaps and unprotected first round picks and protected picks in 2029. And it's like, boy, that feels like a real disadvantage for a team like the Mavericks who really can't make a move like that until next year.
Well, until the offseason, where they can trade.
Or until after the draft, right?
It
feels like we're at a major disadvantage, you know, to be in a position like that. And you know, we've talked about it a lot about the Porzingis deal, and I don't want to get into that, but it goes back to what you said, Landon. Like, they shouldn't make a deal just to make a deal, right? Make the right deal. This is going to be a referendum on Nico, and to be able to see, like, okay, if you're going to move Dorian, what are you getting back? Like, is it another potentially movable contract that you could package over the offseason? Are you taking on, you know, a player that, you know, really doesn't fit, and you're just, you know, shooting a dart at a dartboard and hoping it gets you a bullseye?
I think to your point of your question, it talks about the NBA's trade landscape. You know, us old heads, we remember back when, like, when teams had expiring contracts, that was like a big deal, right? Like, oh, they're going to move this expiring. Now
that was 5 years ago. It wasn't even that long ago.
You hardly see that now, though. Like, if a team has an expiring contract, it's like, okay, and how many picks do you have?
Yep.
And that's twofold. I think it's an overvaluing of teams' scouting departments and then an undervaluing of owning your own future. And so those two tracks are working simultaneously. And I know that they kind of seem in opposition to one another. But I think teams love this belief of, like, our scouting department's going to be the scouting department that finds the diamond in the rough. And then the second part is that teams that are trying to win are saying, you know, to hell with these picks, right? Like, what do they mean for me? And, you know, I'm kind of more so in that camp anyway myself. Like, the window to win is so small that if you have a star, you have to put all your chips in as soon as you can. But what ends up happening, though, is you have a case like, you know, Minnesota. They're just not that good. And now, like, Utah owns their future. And so what do you do? And that, so, Sean Navaz, your question kind of led me to what I was thinking before you asked your question, was that if you're Dallas, right, and, you know, the offseason hits and it's after the draft and you can start trading your draft picks again, do you call up Minnesota and inquire about Karl Anthony Towns?
You know, I hate rumors. What are you doing here, man? He's not even available. So what's the point?
I'm just saying, start a Twitter fire.
He's not available.
Look, if the Timberwolves crash and burn, right?
They'd rather get off Gobert than they would Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, he's not. That's their guy.
I know
Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns.
I know Ian wants to see a team of LeBron and AD and Rudy Gobert, and that's his team right there, right? That's AD's, I know you're the biggest Gobert fan in the world.
But honestly, I like Gobert too. For real though, I like Gobert. He's just on the wrong team. That's the problem. They already have a big. But he changed. Do you see what he did with Utah? They didn't play no defense at all. And he made them a relevant defensive team, and everyone else did not play defense on that team. Even Donovan Mitchell, the boys of defense, he playing defense this season. I said, "What the heck?" He said, "Hey, I didn't do that in Utah."
And remembered how he used to play.
That's what I'm saying. For what he's doing in Minnesota, to your point, I'm Sean Avaz. It's.
Yeah,
overpriced and just the role that he has there, but if you have a lot of offensive players, I think he works.
And the
he would be great in Dallas. Like, he's the type of player who would be great in Dallas.
He would have all these
offensive players.
How many draft picks did they get for him? Like seven, like six or seven, like first round. It was something ridiculous, right? And it's like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I would have done that.
But at the same time, they went for it. That's the thing. Would you rather have a front office that goes for it?
That's true. That's true. I would rather be on the, because it's a catch 22, right? You're either going to be on the side of the team.
Because it worked out for Mitchell and the Cavs. We're not talking about them. What if it didn't work out?
Yeah, you're either on the side that goes for it and you say, wow, we gave up too much, it didn't work out, blah, blah, blah. Or you're on the side where we are and it's like, well, we can't retain anybody. We don't make any good trades. Like, what are we going to do? You know, I'd much rather be on the side that goes for it. 100%. Yeah. To Ian's point, I mean, and you said it as well, Andy. I mean, we'll have to see in the offseason when the Mavericks have access to those draft picks. You know, you're talking picks plus pick swaps. You know, a bunch of guys that are going to be movable contracts. When you talk about money, it seems like every year there's always some disgruntled star that wants to move, right? We haven't heard rumblings of it yet in terms of, you know, generally you start hearing stuff around the deadline and, you know, not necessarily rumors, but really just kind of talking, especially from, you know, sources that you trust. You start hearing things that, oh, this person's unhappy or, you know, we started hearing a lot of the Kyrie and KD stuff, you know, last year on this time. So it's weird that we haven't heard any of that right now, but I think over the summer, and as the NBA kind of gets out of this COVID, you know, these last few COVID years and the salary cap jumps, you're going to, I'm hoping there's going to be a situation where the Mavericks have a chance to at least put all their chips in the basket put all their eggs in the basket and, you know, go for it.
But they don't have to get a star. And that's why a point I want to make. They don't have to get a second star in Dallas. They just have to have, a squad. Like, that's the thing. Like, because, like I said earlier, like Dorian, Reggie, you know, all these players, Davis Bertans and Dwight Powell. They're good players, but they shouldn't be playing in the spot that they are. Like, you're trusting Dorian to be like your third best player right now with Wood out, and you're trusting Powell to secure the paint, and he's not that type of player. That's what, if they get quality role players and that are in the position to be in the spots that they are, I think they could work it out. I don't think they have to put all their chips in the basket, but Nico does have to do something.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it would be nice to have another star in Dallas. I mean, it'll be it nice, would, but it's hard think, right now.
I think you've got a guy in Luka that is unlike a lot of players that we've seen in the NBA. You know, people say that, is he the next LeBron or whatever, but I think their games are, while similar, they're different, right? And I don't think he's entirely James Harden or any comp that people make, but you've got a guy that literally can take over a game, but also makes everybody around him better in most cases, right? And I think,
yeah,
if you, like you said, Landy, you put the right pieces around him, it doesn't necessarily have to be a star, right? I don't think anybody considered Jalen Brunson to be a star before the postseason last year, but a guy like that, like, fits really well. You know, players of that similar nature who can create their own shot and dribble the, you know, and can be a ball handler and can also, you know, run the offense. you know, while Luka's, you know, coming off screens and then posting up. I mean, that's kind of what you need. And then you've got guys off the bench that, you know, we, for all the stuff that we talk about Tim Hardaway Jr., if Tim Hardaway Jr. was your seventh, eighth man coming off the bench, you'd be pretty happy with that, right? I mean, that's kind of what his role seems, it's kind of what his role is kind of carved out to be. But this roster is so void of playmakers and shooters that he's thrust into the starting lineup because the other guy that you had in Reggie Bullock couldn't get it done either.
And that's what it boils down to. Like you said, T.A. Shea and Dorian Finney-Smith right now are fighting for your third best player with Wood out. And that's a problem. And when you look at the top of the West, Denver Nuggets, they don't have a second star. I mean, Jamal Murray's a great player in the league. Michael Porter Jr., when healthy, is a great player. But they're not stars. Memphis Grizzlies, who's their second best player? Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane. They're not stars, but they're great players. And that's the problem. I think that's what it boils down to. Luka is up here, and they have good players, but they don't have those great players next to them.
I hear what you guys are saying, but I just also think the NBA is a league of stars.
So you think they need a star?
Yeah, I'm a firm believer of you need two stars to win a championship. I mean, look at the two teams that played in the finals last year, and then look at the Boston Celtics. This Jaylen Brown, star, superstar. Jason Tatum, superstar. And then they filled out the rest with really good starters and role players. And then you know, in my book with Denver, Jamal Murray is a star, so Jokic is a super duper star. And then Aaron Gordon is a really good star.
You think Jamal Murray's a star?
In my book, he's a star just because of the way he was playing pre-ACL and knowing
he's still going to the bubble. He's still getting flashbacks of that bubble. No, I mean, he's not going to make an all-star game.
No, but this is what I'm saying is it not even just like the bubble part, but that entire year, if you go back, look at his numbers, he was hooping, but even before the bubble. And
he's like a fringe star. There's some nights you could classify. I'll agree with that. Man,
And so that's kind of where I put him. It's just that like in my mind, Dallas would be a contender if they had a guy like Jamal Murray, you know, like then I'm like, okay, this team's kind of spicy, that like fringe star type of guy. It doesn't have to be Dallas doesn't have to go out and find a super duper star, but a guy that's like really good starter to fringe star next to Luka, and then you fill out the rest.
The other thing, and this kind of like ties everything together, right, that we've been talking about. Look at all these teams. Ian, the ones you just mentioned, Denver, what did they do? They drafted Jamal Murray. Boston, what did they do? They drafted Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Milwaukee made a shrewd trade to get Chris Middleton, who was a nobody from Texas A&M, and turned him into a star. And then what did they do? All these teams made the right free agency decisions. Denver goes out and gets Bruce Brown, makes a deal for Kentavious Caldwell. But Boston gets Derek White last year. Right, gets Al Horford back. Milwaukee goes and trades, mortgages their future and three first round picks for Jrue Holiday, and turns around and wins the title. I mean, all these teams have pieces to them and components that the Mavericks don't, and that's the Mavericks' inability to draft well because of the previous regime, and then the fact that you lost your first round picks in the Porzingis deal, and then turn that around where that deal is still coming back to bite you because you can't trade your picks. And now, like we talked about, there's such a price on unprotected first round picks or late pick swaps, and the Mavericks are kind of lagging behind every other team because of mistakes that they made in the past.
So basically have a great front office.
Yeah, I mean, look, Tim Conley,
that's what
Tim
you say.
Tim Conley left Utah, goes to Minnesota. What's the first thing he does? Goes out and gets Rudy Gobert. Right. At the time we said, you guys love Rudy Gobert. I'm indifferent towards him, but they went for it. Right. Why? Their GM gets hired and says, you know what? We're going to have our own version of our 2 7-footers. And what do? They trade 7 first round picks to go out and get him. Right. Colby Altman. What does Colby Altman do in Cleveland? Right. Knowing that, hey, this team played really, really well last year. Also, Cleveland drafted Darius Garland, drafted Evan Mobley. made the trade to get Jared Allen from when the when the Nets were looking to move James Harden. What does he do? He says, here's 5 first round picks. I'll go get Donovan Mitchell. Because if I can bring another title to Cleveland, it's all worth it. Right?
So what should they do, Sean Navarro? So, I mean, should they keep those picks and draft, like you say, or should they use those picks and trade, like you say? Which one?
It's a good question. I think it depends on where you are as a franchise. And I think, like Ian said, when you've got a guy like these teams before, let's not forget, prior to Cleveland drafting Evan Mobley, there's a reason they got Evan Mobley and they got Darius Garland, who were, Garland was, I think, 6th pick and Evan Mobley was a 2nd pick. They were drafting high for a reason, right? Like, these teams were bad. These teams were really bad and drafted, well. Because Luka is so good, there's no way we were going to pick that high in the draft anyway. So when you've got a guy like Luka Doncic, who is as generational as he is, who could single-handedly probably get you out of the first round, and you need that other guy who can help you win the next 2-3 rounds, Mavericks are in a position where this offseason they need to look and say, who's available? Here's all of our picks. We're gonna bring somebody in with Luka, somebody who fits the timeline. You're not bringing in a 32, 33-year-old guy. You ideally want to bring in somebody that fits that timeline. And then you try to make shrewd deals where you're getting protected first-round picks for some of the guys you're trading. You're getting draft picks attached to some of these guys that you're trying to get off your books. If the Mavericks are looking to move Dorian Finney-Smith and, or even Tim Hardaway Jr. or Bullock, and you're looking to get off the money, how many times have we seen players moved for protected first-round picks that those then protected first-round picks are traded for unprotected picks, right? They've got to be very, very methodical in the way that they're going about these deals over the next year or two.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so we'll leave it at that. I mean, obviously, that is a perfect segue into next week where we will dive into some of the big the big trade rumors going on and
we haven't seen
what's going to happen with the Mavericks.
If there's going to be one domino that falls, and it's just going to be a whirlwind of deals over the next over the next week or two,
or nothing.
Yeah, or everybody stands pat and says, "All right, never mind."
All right, so the final words, Ian. What are you looking forward to seeing from the Mavericks in the month of February?
Oh man, I don't know if there's much of anything to look for. No. I want to see some coaching accountability, man, and I want to see some regular games from Luka, which would mean that everyone else is doing their part. So, yeah, that's what I want to see.
Okay, Sean Navaz, what do you want to see from the Mavericks in the month of February?
No blown leads. If you've got the lead, close the game out. It's a really tough stretch for the Mavericks, especially the first part of February, where you've got Clippers, you've got the Kings twice, you've got a lot of playoff teams coming up on your schedule. If you've got the lead, hold it. This team was so good at it last year. Just find a way.
Find a way, and that's what I want to see in the month of February for the Mavericks, to find a way to hold teams under 100, like the Heat game and the Suns game. They did that, but when you look at the other games, it's getting ridiculous. I mean, what are we gonna see 5 years from now? 180 point game from a team, 200 maybe 6 years, 7 years down the road? I mean, this is getting crazy. Teams, play some defense. My goodness.
I have a feeling the NBA is gonna put in a rule change, though.
This is like ridiculous.
It's kind of like when the games got too physical in the early 2000s, so they got
bring back hand checking.
They got to do something because, I heard a stat that's like the number of 40-point games this year has almost doubled like last year's 40-point game.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so it's like if everyone's getting 40, then 40 must be the
Ian wants those 92 to 87 games. That's what he wants. That's what he's hoping for in the next 5 years.
Hey, I would love those games.
I'm
with you, Ian. And that'd be some defense.
I don't know if my
leader scorer in the league averages 22 a game.
I mean, that's what we need to see some middle ground, because these 120, 130, 140, that's too much. I mean,
people love them, man. People love them. It's like in baseball. People love home runs, right? Like, why are you going to change it? That's what gets people to watch, is a flurry of threes and, you know, super high scoring games. I mean, that brings in the money.
So, Sean DeVos, you like those type of games, the 140, the All-Star games?
I don't like the All-Star games.
It is. When you're watching these games. I mean, when you're watching the Mavericks, and I'm not just talking Mavericks as a whole. Like, when you see teams score 40 in the first quarter, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, was the kids put up like a couple weeks ago? They put up like 50 or something in the first quarter. I was like, wait, hold on. Yeah, there's no defense anymore in the NBA.
Yeah, and that's what I want to see with the Mavericks. I want to see some defense. I want to see some coaching. Call some timeouts. Jason Kidd, if they're on, I've seen so many opposing team runs in the month of January. So I want to see just timeout in the middle of those runs just to level set the defense and try to apply some effort on that. So we'll see. But also excited to see Chris Silva, see what he does. Like Ian said, hopefully he gets a real opportunity. I mean, there's not that many guys, not that many big guys on the team right now. I mean, Bertans and Powell, they're undersized, and McGee, you don't know what you're going to get from him. So it would be nice to see another guy just come in there, kind of like Marquise Chris did, you know, with his opportunity that he had, just to get a real playing time and see what he does. So just want to thank everyone for tuning in. Make sure y'all tune in next week. It's going to be a lot of chaos in a good way. Goodbye, everyone.